Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Dominic, how you doing, my little buddy?
Crudy, I'm great, man. One day closer to Friday on this holiday week. Very excited to be here. Lots to talk about again today, folks. Make sure you join us. We've got some good guests today.
And the finest of all producers has helicoptered in for the show. Fancy Brian, welcome to it, big guy.
Hey, guys. Hi.
Hey, the Cubs won yesterday, Brian, so you got that going for
you. Yeah, and I tuned into that exact moment. That's when I thought I finished the job that I was finishing today.
All right. Welcome
back,
man.
Hey, we don't play the Cubs.
No, but you had announced it on the air at that point, and I was very excited that I'd tuned into that.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Hang the W. And we got Evan here in the world headquarters, lightly screening the calls. But you know, boys, I feel like this is the calm before the storm. The calm before the storm. Because tomorrow is Pat Cipollone Day. The White House counsel scheduled to give what? Videotaped testimony.
Recorded testimony to be played presumably maybe as soon as what? Next Tuesday?
Lordy, there's tapes. There's going to be tapes.
And I'm also hearing, I heard on MSNBC, I think it was Punchbowl News, I haven't seen corroborating information on this, but they are reporting that next Thursday, a week from today, that the J6 will do their final primetime hearing as well. But so we'll stand by for that.
Primetime. Well, you know, we'll play them all out. Gavel to gavel coverage. That's what we promise you here on Devil Radio and the Shaw. All things working out. Fancy Brian, he'll be gone next week, going to Buffalo, big family reunion.
Long Island, New York City.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, nice, man.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I haven't seen these people in a long time.
Well, we will miss you, man. Travel safe.
Compared to Buffalo, I think that's an upgrade.
I like the wings. I'm weighing everything against how much I like the wings. That's pretty much it.
Well, boys, let's hop into the big testimony that's going to happen tomorrow. You'll still be here tomorrow, right? Right, guys?
In the area, yeah.
tomorrow's Friday, right? Yeah, I'll be here. Come on, it's the last day of the week. I can get one more day out.
All four. three for me. Pat Cipollone. Anyways, back to the big expected testimony of Pat Cipollone. I want to start today, Dom, with an opinion piece. Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. Former White House counsel Pat Cipollone has been the missing man at the hearings for the House Select Committee investigating the J6 insurrection. Although present at the most critical moments in the coup attempt, until now, he has refused to testify formally. That will now change with his agreement to give a videotaped, transcribed interview. Well, not under oath. Why not? Why not under oath?
That's a great question. That's the first I've heard of this from this piece from Rubin. Why not under oath? I mean, you are an attorney, right? You were testifying to Congress.
Well, while not under oath, lying to Congress is still a crime, so he has every reason to stick to the truth. Does he? I'd like to see his hand on a Bible. You know, whether he believes it or not, I'd still like to see
fewer
it.
And fewer do, thank goodness.
That's yet more bad news for defeated former President Donald Trump. Cipollone has appeared for an informal interview with the panel, but he resisted speaking beyond a limited set of topics with claims of executive privilege. The J6 committee finally gave up friendly negotiations and sent out a subpoena last week. Yeah, man, playing a little hardball. Faced with the prospect of criminal contempt and political sanction, potential sanctions from the bar. Cipollone, a working lawyer. Well, he agreed to at least show up. At least show up. Man, that's a low bar.
Hey, man, that's half the battle.
Dominic, it seems his initial claims of privilege have fallen by the wayside. President Biden has waived executive privilege, and others have already testified about communications with Trump, including former White House counsel Eric Hirschman. You know, he's the one that recommends you get a good effing lawyer, defense attorney. Yeah. Former Justice Department officials and Cassidy Hutchinson, a top aide to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Plus, Cipollone has no attorney-client privilege with Trump. His client was the U.S. government, a concept Trump never could grasp, right? White House counsel, no doubt. Thought it was his counsel.
Anybody around Trump who's an attorney, Trump thinks is his attorney.
Well, Dom, you know, Jennifer Rubin has prepared some fine questions. I wish we were in the J6 panel. I'd have a few, but we'll get there in a moment. As for the possibility that Cipollone takes the Fifth, constitutional scholar Lawrence Tribe tells me Cipollone might try to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege against compelled self-incrimination, but it doesn't look like he was personally involved in anything criminal, so that privilege would not be applicable. Right?
Exactly, right. Crudy, I'll jump in here. Cipollone apparently lacks the nerve of 25-year-old Hutchinson, given that he will avoid the exposure that comes with public testimony. But his interview will be videotaped and therefore will be used in future hearings. His testimony also can be used by the committee and prosecutors to, among other things, cross-examine him if he testifies later in front of the committee or a grand jury. His testimony can also be cited in the committee's final report. Cipollone may have answers to a slew of questions to either corroborate other testimony or provide new evidence only he may have witnessed. For example, a few bullet points here, Crudy. Let's do one by one. I'll do one, then you do one. Okay. I'll start out.
I'll play along.
All right. Here are some questions that Jennifer Rubin from The Washington Post contemplates asking Mr. Cipollone. How did John Eastman, the chief architect of the coup plot, end up providing legal advice to Trump? No doubt. I mean, that's like number one. I mean, when I first saw this guy coming around and making, I thought to myself, who's this guy? And same with Mike Lindell. I mean, what a circus. Who are these people and why are they in front of a mic talking to me?
Lindell is presumably a donor, and I would speculate just rampantly, Dom, the connection between Eastman is, of course, the fact that he clerked for Clarence Thomas.
Oh, Mr. Ginny Thomas, yes.
Yes, Ginny's husband, Clarence. That is the, you know, the reason he's in prominent circles, I would suspect. Here's the next one. Did Eastman or Meadows ever concede there was no voter fraud? Did Trump?
I thought
Eastman kind of did in an email. It was less than a complete concession. But, you know, since we're breaking a few laws, let's break a few more. That was more the tone.
Crudy, others have testified that you described the letter written by Jeffrey Clark, the Justice Department official, whom Trump wanted to appoint as acting attorney general, declaring the election as fraudulent, as a murder-suicide pact, quote-unquote. What did you mean by that? Did Trump indicate he understood it was illegal?
Here's another one. Why did Trump want to replace acting attorney general Jeffrey Rosen? Why did Rosen refuse to sign Clark's letter? Why indeed? Those are all excellent questions, Tom.
Another, what do you know about Trump's call to election officials in Georgia and other states? Did Trump understand his conduct was illegal?
Sort of as an aside to that point, you see that Lindsey Graham is now being subpoenaed by the Fulton County District Attorney. And I do declare Lindsey doesn't want to answer these subpoenas. Now, he's on the, Senate Judiciary Committee. He's a lawyer. He's, going to ignore the subpoena process? Like, oh, subpoenas. Their claim is something about, I'm part of the legislative branch and, you're part of the state executive branch. So I forget what they call that. I would call it hogwash.
Well, of course. I mean, essentially, they're saying that he's hiding behind
separation of the branches.
He's saying that he's got a right to inquire as being, you know, part of the legislative branch to yada yada yada. It's basically
but
what
he's
doing his
Georgia.
Job. He's doing his job. That's why I was just doing my job. I was just following orders.
Shares a border with Georgia. That's his claim to fame. I'm not
clear
why. The day
Richard Nixon failed to answer that subpoena is the day that he was subject to impeachment because he took the power from Congress over the impeachment process away from Congress, and he became the judge and jury.
And
here's a quick quote.
Judge and jury.
Let me digress a moment on this point from the Rubin piece from CNN. Graham's legal team stated that as the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Graham was, quote, well within his rights to discuss with state officials the processes and procedures around administering elections.
Around finding more votes for the former? I mean, really, it wasn't his state.
That's just, you know, he's a giver. He's just going above and beyond the job description, man.
A contiguous state with South Carolina. You know, it's close. It's close, like. Hand grenades and horseshoes, right? A little bit more here, Dom. What do you know about I think you read this one. What do you know about Trump's calls to election officials in Georgia and other states? And did Trump understand this conduct was illegal? And here's another one, because I feel like I redundantly said yours. Did you advise Trump to concede the election? That's a great question. He never conceded. What conversations did he have with Vice President Mike Pence and Pence's lawyers? Yes.
What did you try to remove from Trump's January 6th speech? Why were those changes rejected? And if so, who rejected them?
I got to think it was Ivanka. I'm just saying that. I'm just randomly speculating at this point. I can't wait for the video of the testimony of Pat Cipollone. And also, later in this big show, Dom, we got a doctorate, Dr. Louis Friedland, coming in studio here with me in Madison. He's in the hizzy. He's in the lobby. He'll be in studio soon. But your calls, they could be next. The Thursday edition of the Devils After Its radio show. I'm eagerly awaiting the Cipollone testimony coming soon. Hopefully on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
5J6 on Tuesday. More Devils next.
If you're not turned on to politics, politics will turn on you.
The suspense is terrible. He's going to go this time.
I hope it'll last.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
All I want to do is be able to watch.
Just aim higher.
The Devil's Advocates. The fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we are back. Thank you for listening. You are running with the Devil's Advocates. Join us on the phones at 844-967-2789. We can take your calls this segment then. Dr. Louis Friedland is going to join us from UW-Madison at the bottom of the hour.
Dominic, I know we're, you know, speculating about the questions Pat Cipollone, White House counsel, you know, the grilling he's going to take from the J6 committee. And we will eventually see the testimony. Could be just a few days, right?
Yeah,
because next Tuesday, the J6 committee is back to doing live hearings, and we'll cover them right here. That will be a daytime hearing, and Dom's reporting that apparently a primetime hearing next Thursday. Perhaps we'll confirm when we can. Also, I gotta correct the record. Yesterday, I said the Highland Park shooter had left his cell phone right across the street from my former office. And I had misidentified the location. You know, literally, it was up the street from my house.
Oh.
Yeah, by the Wells Fargo there. The body shop next, the motor shop next door. It was right off University Avenue.
Well, that's some scary stuff, man.
So anyways, yeah. I mean, literally could have been looking at the park across from my house, the baseball game, the picnickers that day. Anyways, I hate to, you know, live in the past.
But you got to correct the record. I appreciate that, Curdy.
Because I did mislocate it yesterday. Also, Dominic, there's something we've forgotten about the next J6.
What's that?
Why, Lordy, there was already tapes. There was a documentarian, right? Did we forget about the documentarian?
You know, I kind of did, yeah.
the documentary, Dom. It comes out on July 10th. So you can get a little preview. I mean, this has got to be great for the guy's documentary. Let's tell the story just briefly. On Thursday, Business Insider reported that Alex Holder, the British documentary filmmaker who went behind the scenes during the former President Donald Trump's plot to overthrow the 2020 presidential election. Do you think that was kind of worked into the script? Hey, I know you guys came, but we're plotting this coup, and you know, it'd be super cool if you
did it all. Great timing. You can see how it all works.
Well, apparently the documentarian has revealed new details about how the former president's children reacted to his loss in private. Holder, in a Tuesday interview with the Insider, described seeing a mixture of reactions amongst Trump's three eldest children, Ivanka, Eric, and Don Jr. There was an attitude that one of them would give, which was sort of incredibly bitter and angry about the end result, Holder said. Yeah. And then there were the other children who were totally in denial and would not even refer, discuss, or engage with anything to do with the fact that they were no longer in the White House and the catastrophe that had taken place earlier. Now, Holder did not elaborate on which of the three children had which reactions. Got to watch the documentary, Dom. That's a tease. Trump's two eldest sons, Don Jr. and Eric, have vocally stood behind their father in his unfounded claims the election was stolen, the report noted. In a string of text messages first reported by CNN, Don Jr., you remember Fredo, Dom, Don Jr. encouraged former White House counsel, former White House chief of staff Mark Meadows to pursue multiple paths, right? We have multiple paths.
Yeah, we own them all, or we control them all, something along those lines.
Multiple paths to overturn his father's election loss. In a separate interview with The Independent, Holder said that Eric was unconcerned about potential violence from the Trump supporters, reacting to false claims of election fraud. In contrast, Ivanka and her husband, Jared, stayed tight-lipped in the final weeks of Trump's presidency while slowly distancing themselves from the administration.
Slowly back away from the body.
Now, Dom, here's the details in case you want to watch it. Catch it this weekend. Holder's documentary, which is scheduled to air on July 10th on Discovery Plus. Do I have that channel? I'm unclear. Where's Discovery Plus? I hope it's on my.
Oh, is that part of Paramount? I'm not clear. Or do they have their own? Is that owned by somebody else?
I think it's a streaming service.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have that one.
If it says Plus, you got to buy it.
Oh, well, I didn't pay the Plus. I have to wait till someone records it, puts it on YouTube for free dissemination, and then we'll give it to you courtesy of Discovery Plus next week. So anyways, it's playing out July 10th on Discovery Plus, and it has gained significant publicity after the House Select Committee investigating the Capitol riots subpoenaed his footage as part of their investigation. And this comes as Ivanka's conduct in the run-up to the January 6th attack has come under fresh scrutiny. Couldn't be the daughter, Dom. You know, the one that dad likes, dad's favorite. More reasons than one. Daddy, can I go with? I said, yes, you can. Anyway, she claimed in a deposition for the House January 6th committee that she agreed with former Attorney General William Barr's assessment debunking Trump's conspiracy theories about the election. But privately, telling a different story. In 2020, she said she believed Trump should continue to fight the election results. Well, that is a contradiction indeed.
Well, and it comes down to the details. I mean, he did fight. They lost 61 out of 62 court cases. I mean, so to what degree and what was the timing of those statements?
They had already lost all those fights long before the January 6th occurred, right? I mean, yes. The false Trump electors here in the state of Wisconsin, we talked about the fact the real electors for Joe Biden were cast on December 14th. And the false Trump electors also, committed their fraud on December 14th. But here in the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had already closed all avenues, had already ruled effectively Joe Biden won the election. 4-3. Shouldn't have been that close.
It was close. Well, on the committee's hearing on Tuesday, one of the focus is supposed to be, a main focus, is the national groups, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. And I think we kind of glossed over this with all the information coming out, specifically that those names are mentioned in the White House. I mean, imagine saying the Brown Shirts or something along, or the, you know, Hell's Angels or the KKK, my crew's coming out. I mean, if that's the case, I wonder if this documentarian has some of that as well.
Hey, Donnie, the Klan's here to see you. They brought KFC. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. We got a fine cast in the world headquarters. Dr. Louis Friedland. More on the other side.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Is this a dating video?
Daddy, can I go with you? I said, yes, you can.
My Satan sense is tingling.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dom, I've been joined by a fine guest here in the world headquarters. He is Dr. Louis Friedland. Dr. Friedland, welcome. Lou.
Thank you.
What do you prefer to be called?
Just Lou Friedland is good.
Lou, pull that mic a little closer. Let him hear you loud and sexy.
Okay. There you go. All right, Lou. Good to meet you, man.
How's that?
Good, sir. Good. Yeah. Now, you are recently quoted in the New York Times, I believe. But I want to go back. You know, I've been quoting your work for a long time, sir. First and foremost, what work did you do at the UW? Just introduce yourself for those that don't know.
I was a professor of journalism and mass communication at the UW for about 30 years. I retired in January, and last thing we did is published a book called Battleground about Wisconsin and political communication in Wisconsin. So I've been studying Wisconsin politics and communication for a long time, but seriously for probably 12 continuous years.
And I know you did a study here in the state of Wisconsin, especially of the right-wing talk radio infrastructure. And the timing on that was approximately 2016. Is that approximately right, sir?
Yeah, we started in 2012, but the in-depth dive that we did started with 2016, although we looked at it from 2012 all the way through 2020. The grad student, who's named Carrie Hughes, give him the credit, who did some work on that, he updated it in 2020, so we have data up through 2020.
And I've quoted that data often. I've used it on the show, sir. I talk about the 81 right-wing talk radio outlets here in the state of Wisconsin. And at that time, understanding this is dated data, if you will, but at that time, they were producing about 235 hours per day across the state, across the broader ecosystem of right-wing talk radio. Well, it was just little old us here in Madison once upon a time. We've grown into another market, and hopefully someday soon we'll get big and we'll fly, but until that day happens, really right-wing media has dominated the state for years, sir.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at it, going all the way back to 1987 when Rush Limbaugh got on WTMJ in Milwaukee, which, as you know, is a 50,000-watt station that dominates the state. So really, we can go all the way back to there, and then Charlie Sykes in the early 2000s joining WTMJ, and you had that 1-2 punch of Limbaugh and Charlie Sykes. Now, Charlie Sykes, I appreciate what he's been doing in the past, 3 or 4 years, but of course, he was essential to Scott Walker becoming governor. I mean, Scott Walker was on Charlie Sykes' show, 2-3 times a week, and they would actually call each other and, say, hey, why don't you come down? We interviewed Charlie Sykes, and he said every time we called Scott Walker, he was happy to come on down and be on the radio. So really, we have, I think, and I mean this sincerely, Charlie Sykes partly to thank for Scott Walker.
Oh, absolutely. There's a direct causation and correlation there, sir, but please continue. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, no, I mean, Sykes and Limbaugh, and then of course Mark Belling, the other 50,000-watt station in Milwaukee. Well, those two cover the state, so you don't even have to get much farther than WISN and WTMJ. But we studied the big 12. We call them the Big 12 talkers. Although once Charlie went off the air, it was technically 11. And the stations that they were on just blanketed the state. They blanketed the state, and they blanketed it during prime time is the main thing. They'd not late in the day, but basically
Prime time for radio is effectively 6 in the morning till 6 at night. That's right. Daytime prime time.
Exactly. And so, you know, what we saw is that even, you know, back in, you know, back in 2012, they were on, they covered 48% of the time of prime time on the stations that they were on. So, so half the time during the day in Wisconsin, and these were, of course, were major radio stations. They weren't the minor radio stations all across the state, you know, Hannity, Levin, all, you know, and then of course, Sykes, Belling, and, Vicki McKenna. And so, but then that went up to 54% in 2016. So more than half the day. And then Charlie Sykes dropped out, of course, or he left the air in 2017, I think it was, maybe it was 16. And the number even went up further. So you drop one of the biggest talkers out, and it's 61%. And 61% broadcasting, you know, by 2020, it was pure Trump radio all the time across the entire state of Wisconsin, with no, basically, other than you guys and a few others, and Wisconsin Public Radio for some balance, but no, nobody, no alternative whatsoever to this basically right-wing talk radio flowing through every major radio station in the state, you know, for the major part of the day.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's Dr. Lewis Friedland, UW-Madison, and he's joining us. I appreciate it, Lou. I got to ask you, the importance of broadcast radio. I mean, we see all the different ways to communicate now, TikTok and Twitter and, you know, all these different ways that people are now communicating. What is it about broadcast radio? Why is that important to the right wing? And I'll call it the propaganda machine, but why is it that they've gravitated to or have taken over that portion of, you know, the media environment?
Well, the why is because once the Fairness Doctrine was repealed, you know, again back in the 1980s under Ronald Reagan, the gift that keeps on giving, first of all, as we all know, it became very profitable for some of these big AM stations to just be pouring this stuff out. So, you know, angry men screaming on the air for, you know, half of their day got other people listening, and it was very profitable. So that's kind of point one. But beyond that, it was just an environment where there was no answer. There was no way for anybody to respond. And we have evidence that, you know, the more that people are exposed to this, the more they begin to believe it. When you're stuck in a certain kind of environment, and that's what you're hearing, and that's what you're tuning into, and that's what your friends are listening to, well, it starts to sound more plausible. If you're hearing "Stop the Steal, Stop the Steal, Stop the Steal," and you're hearing it on the radio, which actually, you know, for most people, you know, we all want to be critical consumers of media and say, hey, wait a minute, is that right or not? But when you hear it on the radio, it's true, right? People take it as being the truth. So it's really important that the right basically captured effectively talk radio across the United States. And it's been that way, you know, almost ever since.
And Lewis, some people don't appreciate when you say they've captured. I just pulled up the Milwaukee Metro ratings, and there's WISN, which is the very conservative, Vicki McKenna, where Dom's buddies hang out, Belling and McKenna and Dan O'Donnell. And then there's the more center-right WTMJ. Well, WTMJ in May of 2022 is pulling a 10.3 share. WISN's a 9.6 share. Collectively, those two stations are a 19.9 share. 20% of all radios in the marketplace from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. are tuned in to right-wing talk radio all day, every day. That certainly affects the narrative.
Oh, of course. And, you know, if you think about that, you know, Mike, the even more so, look, in Wisconsin, if Democrats don't pull Milwaukee and Madison, if they don't pull significant shares of voters out of those two, well, I say market cities, but markets in media terms, then Democrats can't win in this state. So when you've got one of those major markets getting, you know, huge amounts of talk radio, right-wing talk radio, basically pouring into them again 6, 8, 10 hours a day. Well, that's gonna you know, maybe the market share, maybe the Democratic vote drops from, you know, around an average of 70% to 65% because of that 20%, or maybe only, you know, 63%. Well, that doesn't sound like much, but that's enough to tip an election in this state. So the fact that you've got two of the major radio stations in the state, the two biggest ones, the most powerful ones, broadcasting unalloyed political propaganda for basically every day, 5, 6 days a week, means that essentially one party has captured the two major radio stations in this state, but also many others, you know, dozen of others across the state. It's just, you know, at a basic level, just as a scholar of media and democracy, it's just not fair, right? It's just it's just not right. And essentially, you know, we used to have a system, you know, certainly wasn't perfect in the 50s and 60s under the Fairness Doctrine, 70s. You know, I could tell you everything that was wrong with the media system back then, but one thing was that one party didn't capture a major medium in the United States, and since the 80s, it's just one party has dominated them. Now, of course, we have Fox on cable too. So you have a right-wing ecosystem from end to end that's broadcasting things that are demonstrably untrue, and that's the polite way of putting it, demonstrably untrue for, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. It's going to affect people. There's just no way to round
Lou, it. Lou, let me ask you a quick question. When we talk about those 81 radio stations from your earlier studies, does that include the religious stations?
That number was all out of all local news talk. So some of them, you know, and I'd have to go through the list again, Dom, sure, to be absolutely sure. But I'm guessing that some of them were religious. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the other sort of hidden part. There are these non-commercial stations that churches run that also, many of them are effectively preaching from the pulpit, or they're preaching over the airways in a non-tax tax-deductible fashion, which bothers my friend Dominic to no end. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We've got a fine guest live in the Madison studios. He's Dr. Louis Friedland. And Louis, advocacy. You know, setting aside the misinformation that's being promoted on right-wing talk radio, we'll get there. But if all it was is just advocacy for the Republican Party or Donald Trump all day, every day, to this many listeners and this many markets all across the state, I don't see NPR as any sort of fight back. NPR is journalism, and journalism has its place, but journalism is different than advocacy. What Dom and I try to do, and, you know, we're not part of the Democratic Party team per se, but we certainly believe or root most of our ideology somewhere left of MAGA. Let's put it that way. Let's talk about the difference between pure advocacy, if nothing else, whether they were informing their audiences or not, they're certainly advocating a point of view.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that really, when you come down to it, I mean, Hannity is sitting. I was hearing y'all both on the air before when I came in. I mean, Hannity's was calling into Trump. You know, they're talking to each other every single day. I don't know. And then Hannity goes on the air for, you know, 3 hours a day across Wisconsin. There's no separation. It's all right wing talk radio is advocacy for the Republican Party, pure and simple. And so, you know, I don't think there's no daylight there whatsoever.
Lou, some think talk radio is what's wrong with our society. Should we, as the left, should we, and I would like to think, at least how we do it around here, we're leading with truth, and our ideology certainly bleeds into the topics we choose. But do you think the left needs an advocacy platform the same way the right does?
I think it would provide a lot of balance. There's no question about that. When you've got only one side on the air, as again, you know, pervading the airwaves of a single battleground state that can determine the fate of the nation, then yeah, you have to have both sides. Absolutely. There's no question about it.
Well, Louis, the other sort of hidden agenda part is the amount of money being spent on these little radio stations all around the state. And I listen to a lot of my competitors. I listen to people outstate. And they are filthy right now with Ron Johnson ads and Tim Michaels ads. Some of these little station owners are getting $25,000 a month in political buy. Well, if Mr. Michaels happens to be in town, he wants to stop by and get an interview. Yes, sir. Come on in.
Yes, absolutely. Sir.
Similar to the treatment we give you, Dr. Lewis Freeland, here in the Madison, the world headquarters.
But I'm not advertising those, and I still got on the air, so that's a good deal. But no, seriously, my colleague Kathy Kramer, who a lot of people know from her book, did a study. And
well, let's hold that thought. We'll bring him right back for another segment. More Devil's Advocates, more of Dr. Lewis Freeland when we come back. She got my childhood torn one back. I set out running, but it took my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before they...
We never present ourselves as a free and open forum.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
Hey, man, is that freedom rock?
Yeah, man.
Well, turn it up, man.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you follow us on the socials on Facebook at Devil's Advocates Radio, on Twitter at Devil Radio. And if you miss any of this fine show, go to the website, darnwi.com.
Dominic, I've got a fine guest with me here at the world headquarters, Madison, Wisconsin. He is Dr. Lewis Freeland, formerly of UW, now enjoying retirement and occasional media appearances. We appreciate you coming around, Lewis. The New York Times article that we started this conversation referenced not just the ecosystem that is right-wing talk radio, but the fact that it's basically misinforming its audience with some malicious intent. And the word that was referenced over and over again, Dems cheat at elections. So everyone on right-wing talk radio, coast to coast, right now is using a very similar vocabulary, and it's all that the Dems cheat. And if Republicans lose, it's only because the Dems cheated. How damaging can that be for our electoral system, do you think, sir?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I think everyone understands that when that this is basically just setting them up to try to steal the election themselves in 2022 or 20, especially 2024. I mean, if the Dems cheat and the only way, quote, we Republicans can lose, then there's really no way we can lose, essentially, as long as we can overturn those elections in the state legislatures. And I'm sure, obviously, all of your listeners know that the Wisconsin state legislature would be more than happy to just declare, would have been happy to declare Donald Trump the winner in the last election, certainly would do it, or whoever succeeds him in the next one. So it's among the most damaging elements to American democracy, maybe the most damaging that I've seen in 30 years of observing American media.
We know that Dominion Voting Systems sued Fox News for misinforming people specifically regarding Dominion voting. They stole votes from Trump and gave them to Joe Biden. That was the accusation, and the lawsuits are leveled, and we'll see how they play out in the courts. But this is just a step less than that. This is just, well, it's cheating without specifically saying it's Dominion voting machines cheating. And that might keep you out of, let's say getting sued, but I can't imagine what sort of corporate master, how these large corporations like iHeartMedia want their broadcasters out there misinforming the public, I would say with malicious intent.
Yeah, I would say so too. And I mean, obviously the First Amendment protects them, but, there used to be proper regulation, and there's not likely to be anytime soon, but at minimum, you should have alternative points of view on the air. At least that's my opinion. But we're not going to see that anytime soon. So you're right. I mean, essentially, these guys, and again, most of them are large corporations, as you point out. They're not, you know, I don't condone, as you can imagine, perhaps from this conversation, MAGA or MAGA orientations. But at least I respect somebody who believes this stuff. But these guys, they don't believe it.
No. Talking about the hosts themselves.
I'm talking about, well, some of the hosts do, and some of them don't. But the corporations that own those radio stations don't. They don't. They know that this is BS. And if they were facing a lawsuit, a proper lawsuit, then they'd pull it off because they know that it's indefensible. But as you're right, that stop the steal talk, stop the steal or the Dems cheat. That's just working the refs for the next election. That's all that's doing, and that's what they're setting them up to do.
Lou, man. Okay, so we've identified it. We know this, this piece in the New York Times, very edifying, as is your study in our conversation. But I guess the question is, what are we doing? What are we doing about it? I mean, what do we do as you know, ourselves, Kurti and I, as talk hosts? What do we do as voters? What do we do as media consumers to address this very terrible issue, as you mentioned, a threat to this democracy, the greatest have you seen in 30 years?
Well, you know, I wish there were some simple answers, because we have a media system. I think we're in a national emergency, Dom. We have, you know, 2 years to 2024, and we need to do things now. So what can people do now? Well, I think people can call in. They can call into their local radio stations, and they can ask them to have a more balanced diet and put some other people on the
air. Yeah, good luck with that, Lou.
I understand, and I think that the real answer is to have, you know, more stations like this one in Wisconsin and hopefully around the country that can provide at least an alternative point of view. And to use every media outlet that you can to get a more accurate factual message out there. At one level, that's not, you know, there's no magic bullet, unfortunately, but it's just tell the truth as often as you can in as many places as you can and hope that people listen.
Do you, Lou, think how about the impact, if I may, one more quick question here, Lou, and I'll let you go, Kurti. You know, obviously we mentioned TikTok, social media. This is a fairly new phenomenon as you compare it to the, you know, the age and years of broadcast media. How do you see that playing into this formula?
Well, I think social is really important. I know, that Kristen Bry is on the air in the Shaw and your sister station. And Kristen, of course, has had As Goes Wisconsin going for a number of years now. And I think she really understands how to use social and reach people who are more active on social. So we need, you know, people need to be using every possible platform available to get some other, you know, alternative message out there. There's no question about it. And if TikTok, Insta, Facebook, and I will say one quick thing real quickly is that, and Mike referenced this earlier, the Dems do a lousy job of it for the most part. People are too focused on Twitter. Consultants are too focused on TV. They ought to be paying a lot more attention to radio and to social, because there's no reason, you know, that only Ron Johnson's on the air upstate. Those people will take anybody's money. So there's no reason that Dems can't be advertising those outstate radio stations too.
I have not experienced that they do. Should Dems go on right-wing talk radio? Should they go on Fox? They know they're going to catch a beating, but should they do it?
I think yes. And I think, you know, if people are prepared, you know, it's always one, you don't want to be their punching bag, you know, and of course, that's obviously why they usually ask people who have an alternative point of view on. But if you can hold your own and you can sit there and look them in the eye and tell the truth, sure, I think you get that message out everywhere you possibly can.
Now, Lewis, we offered you a beer here on Lefty Talk Radio. You ever been on Righty Talk Radio? Do they offer you a Spotted Cow or a cold one?
Well, no, I've never been on Right Wing Talk Radio, but I hope they would offer me a Spotted Cow.
I wouldn't bet on that either. Our fine guest, Dr. Lewis Fried. I'm sorry, I didn't say your name right, did I?
Friedland.
Yeah. Yes. I'm often bad with name, Lewis. I apologize. It's, you know, it's got to be genetic. Or socialization, one or the other. I can't remember.
Could be the spot.
Yeah, it was the vacation I just took. Lewis, always fascinating. Thank you so much, Dr. Lewis Friedland, for coming down and joining us here at the World Headquarters. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates, the happier happy hour. It's next. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Lou.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest
the Democrats use it.
I'm all about resist. I'm resist. This show is resist. We're now part of resist.